We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
WGR Sports Radio 550 presents.
The joke's going to be on you because I'm just going to quit.
Just get out of my life!
Sports Talk Saturday.
I might quit. I might just quit my job.
Good, then get the hell out of my life. Who needs you? Beat it. Leave me alone.
On WGR.
I'm done. I'm going to smoke some pot.
Sports Radio 550.
Hi, everybody. Welcome. Sports Talk Saturday. Nate Geary's here. Got Ryan Gates in studio. He woke up.
I did wake up.
He made it in.
I'm no longer actually, I don't have a key fob to get into the building anymore.
Oh,
though.
You don't?
Yeah, it was taken away from me.
How do you get in? You presumably don't have a code to get in the other door.
No, the code still works.
Oh, that's good. I'm going to need that after this.
I'm assuming that they just never changed the codes. And
you know, it's funny. I've been here for, I think this is going on 6 years, 5 or 6 years. I have not had a working code to get in the main doors the entirety of my time here.
Well, you can just use mine.
I'd appreciate it.
Because mine
that.
Still works. I just don't have the little thing that you buzz at the door.
Yeah, I mean, you can knock pretty loud. Someone will find you. Someone will come get you there.
Everyone just uses my door code, so you can just use my code. Everyone else
do you
uses
have
it.
Do you have a fob to get into the building that I can use? I feel like I'm here more than you.
Do you think we could like maybe make a counterfeit one, like a counterfeit fob?
I don't think so.
I think they make them so they're very difficult to counterfeit.
Yeah, I think you'd have to like copy technology of some sort, like digital technology. Hackers probably can do it.
Hackers could do it.
And like thieves. You know, that like break into buildings.
Do you think
and
there's anything
diamonds?
In here worth stealing?
No.
I don't think there's much. I mean, there's a lot of our technology
headphones
is fairly old.
Headphones go missing sometimes.
I could use a good pair of headphones.
You know, those little, what are those little things? The little connectors, the adapters that go from
those
our headphones.
Things definitely
those
go.
Things could, those things, yeah, the quarter inches.
I'm still quarter actually hoarding four of them at home, so I'm selling them.
You how much?
Hoarder.
Like 25 bucks a piece.
You could come in here and make a pretty penny. You could make up a little stand. You could put a stand right here. A lot of the on-air people would walk by. And
I'm an entrepreneur.
You are, very clearly. I'm a philanthropist.
No, you're not.
I know. 803-0550, 1-888-552-550. Those are the numbers to call. Not that I've given you anything to call about yet, but I just decided that, you know, out of habit, I would tell you that those were the numbers. Matt Parrino, New York Upstate, is going to join us at 11:30. John Scott is going to join us at 12, and Pat Malacaro, 12:30. We'll kind of talk about a bunch of stuff, but one of the interesting things that sort of arose yesterday from Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio, they're talking, the NFL Players Association was presented with an idea from the league to go to an 18-game schedule. But players, and there isn't really any clarity to this yet, but I think it's one of the worst ideas I've ever heard. You'd
Steve
have a
Tasker's
16
been pushing it for years.
I don't
years.
Like it. I don't like the idea of, and listen, I mean, for the most part, Sal was talking about this. Injuries would likely equalize it anyways, where guys are probably going to miss two games at some point during the season anyways, but that's not entirely true. There are guys that don't miss any football games. The idea that you would have to only play 16, you could only potentially play 16 out of 18 games unless you were a quarterback or kicker or long snapper. And listen, Steve's an ex-player. I mean, he would probably have a better understanding of what players want more than I do. But I could tell you that I would, from a fantasy football perspective, that's a terrible idea. And I know, listen, I know that the league isn't making decisions based on fantasy football, nor should they. But, you know, for me, it's like, a week to week, you would have to know early in the week which player was not going to be made available. And why would you do that as an organization?
You absolutely wouldn't.
You would. You'd want it to be a game time decision so that you're going into a game saying we have to prepare for everyone, you know, and basically what would end up happening to me is the two worst teams in the league, the three, four worst teams in the league would get an opportunity basically to play every team without their two best players.
The only reason, obviously, the idea of an 18
I like the idea of an 18-game schedule. I don't like the idea that you're stopping guys from playing two games.
Why do we need to have the 18-game schedule is really my question.
I think I'm pretty okay with 16 at the moment.
16 seems to be fine. I mean, I know they went from 14 to 16 at some point.
I would really like to see them at least scale out one preseason game. If that's what we're going to do, I'd be okay with like them ditching a preseason game or two.
Well, from the NFL perspective, it all comes down to revenue. So you get more ad revenue, and if you get two more regular season games, that's going to give you a hell of a lot more ad revenue for regular season games on the big networks like CBS, Fox, NBC, ESPN, than it would in any capacity for those preseason games where it's playing, you know, on Channel 7 here just locally. So you would phase out that. And for the NFL, of course, they're all about revenue. They're a business. They've always all been about the revenue. So if you get an extra two games, that's going to be a boon for them. I don't know. I understand that there is always more hunger for football,
more football. Yeah.
NFL football specifically and college football specifically. But I don't know. I don't think there's like this clamoring from the fans just begging for an 18-game season.
Yeah.
Especially if you're going to do it in a capacity where the best players aren't playing in every single game.
The thing is, too, is during when you buy season tickets, or worse, how about this? When you're buying an individual game ticket, let's say you are a New York based, you're a transplant from Los Angeles and you live in New York City, and you see that in the Giants schedule they play the Rams in week 15, right? And you're like, oh, I'm scooping up those tickets right now. Can't wait to see Gurley, Goff, and company. Oh, I'm so excited. My favorite player ever is Robert Woods. And then you show up to the football game, and at 12:40, when they release the inactives, they say Robert Woods and Todd Gurley are can't play today because they're getting one of their two games they are not playing in. And you just bought, you know, a $600 lower bowl ticket at MetLife Stadium. You're going to be pretty pissed. So, like, I think of it from the fan perspective. I think the only people clamoring for 18 games, I don't think there's a ton of fans right now that are out there saying, I need two more games. I think that mostly this is coming from a revenue, from a league standpoint. I don't even know how many owners truly want that. Like, how many owners would truly want to say, I would want one more revenue. Home game. And here's the thing, like, I like the idea. If they're looking to better their product, I don't believe adding two games is the play here. I think what would be a smart move is adding an additional bye week and putting, or even if you wanted to do this, if you wanted to go to the 18-game schedule, offer each team three bye weeks. But then you're talking about starting the season in what, August? Like, it would have to start in August. You're not going to have teams go into January, into February, playing regular season football. It's just, so basically, if you're adding two games, you have to, at the minimum, add a bye week as well. Because with those games and the stretches you would have, you'd have to, at the very minimum, add one more bye week. So now we're talking about a 20-week football season. That's a long time before you even get to the playoffs. Now it becomes strategically based on, okay, well, who is playing when? By the end of the year, teams are going to be just, even if you get two bye weeks, you'll be dead by the end of the season.
I think with the idea out there now, and the one that Steve Tasker has talked about for a long time on this radio station, the only thing that I like about it is I think it actually, not that there isn't a lot that goes into head coaching decisions, or maybe it would fall into like a GM decision, but the strategy of going behind like where you would take out players in those specific weeks and who you're going to do it against, because you're not going to do it against divisional opponents. You're probably going to do it against conference opponents, because those are the tiebreakers come down to at the end of the season. So if, like you mentioned, if it's, let's say the Bills are playing in LA for the one time they do that in 8 years, you're probably going to be missing out on some of the top players. So if you're a Bills fan that's living in Los Angeles,
or wants to travel, right?
And you have Josh Allen, let's say in a few years is doing really well, and that's like he's a great player. You want to see Josh Allen, and you're living in Los Angeles, and the Bills are going to come to Los Angeles for the first time in 8 years, and he shows up, and the LA isn't doing well that year, so the Bills are going to sit Josh Allen for that week and play Tyree Jackson instead.
Yes.
And I think there's already that discussion in the NBA of where fans are paying for tickets, and you've got a guy like Kawhi Leonard, for instance, this year, who played about three quarters of the games that were on the schedule, not because he was injured, just because they wanted to rest the guy. And when it comes down to that, are you looking out for the best interest of the fans who are paying the money? Ultimately, no. It's you're looking out for the best interest of the product, and in the name of player safety, trying to keep those players healthy, which is a benefit to the team, especially a team, when you look at Toronto this year, having a healthy Kawhi Leonard being able to play until
was big for them, clearly.
End.
Very big for them.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's always going to come back to what is the league's greatest interest, and the league's greatest interest is only making money and making more money, and even though they're already making a hell of a lot of money in all sorts of different ways, there's always going to be a hunger for more money instead of just being satisfied with what you have, which is why there's going to be talks of a Bill Stadium and how Bill Stadium is going to set up and if they're going to have luxury boxes and if corporate boxes and are they going to be able to sell those? Because everything comes down to not what is good for an individual fan. It comes down what is good for the
product.
The shield.
Yeah, and maybe not even the product, maybe just the NFL in terms of revenue, because I think that the NFL would likely sacrifice a optimal product if they could figure out a way to weasel out a couple more billion dollars. Excuse me. And one of the things too that you look at from the league standpoint is I think the NBA is a really good example of this. The NBA already has an issue with teams that are sitting healthy players. This was a big, big talking point a few years back with the Spurs when they had a very, very, very veteran basketball team. They had Tim Duncan in the very twilight of his career, same with Tony Parker, same with Manu Ginobili, and then a young Kawhi Leonard. And you have games where all four guys are sitting, and you're left with guys like Tiago Splitter and guys that you don't really care to see. You know, no offense to... what is his name? Mills. Scotty Mills.
Patty Mills.
No offense to Patty Mills, but people aren't paying to go see Patty Mills play. They're going to see Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili play. And so that became more sort of like an identity crisis for the NBA, is that you have a team, especially a team like the San Antonio Spurs, with a Hall of Fame head coach, maybe one of the best NBA coaches of all time, where he's doing this strategic thing that is allowing him to reserve the energy, so I quote unquote, of his best players for the playoff stretch. And, you know, I would love to see the numbers behind that, what rest in February does for players in June. I would be interested if there is any real correlation between, you know, getting a week break. Because otherwise, like, why not spread the game? If you're the NBA, why not just give teams extra 2-day breaks instead of just having to play 5 and 10 or having to play 6 and 15 days? Like, that's a lot of football or a lot of basketball. In football, it's regulated. You play once a week, except for the instances of Thursday night football and sometimes Saturdays at the end of the season when they've got those primetime games in Thanksgiving and Christmas and such. But I just look at it by the end of the season. What sitting your best would you just start the season by not starting your two best players in the first two games and let them play the stretch out?
Well, like, I think that's part of the question is where do those games come into play and who are you playing early in the season? Like, you look at the Bills schedule this year, and let's just say there are two more games added to the end of it. They're playing the Jets week one. You're not going to not play your starters against the Jets in an important divisional game that could come down to the end of the season. It really hurts that I think the cross where it's AFC versus NFC, because that's where everybody is going to be sitting their players, and it's going to make those games much less interesting. So who knows? Maybe the Packers coming to town, you want to go see Aaron Rodgers. You're not going to see Aaron Rodgers because the Packers are going to sit him against the Bills. So when you've got fans who are paying that money, I just think it isn't right for the league to be able to do that. And I'm just reading a quick article here, and the NFLPA, their analysis says, like, two regular season games added for each team could increase league revenue by $2.5 billion. So that's what they're looking at, is $2.5 billion in
that's increased. A lot of money.
It is a
for
lot of money.
Two games is a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. So the other question that I have, if they're going to go to this 18-game schedule, like, what are you doing with rosters? Because you are going to need extra players, so that's going to create a wider talent pool. And I think they haven't added a team in how long in the NFL? Houston was the last one.
Houston was the last team added. Yeah.
And I think one of the things about, you know, I compare it to hockey for the most part. And you listen to some of the, I think, guys who watched hockey back in the 70s and the 80s before there was what is now going to be 32 teams in the NHL. The talent pool and how it was so much smaller, so all the players were really good. I think there's a wider talent pool now because there's more people playing sports. But with football, you're going to keep widening out these rosters. There's less and less people playing football. Yeah. The talent pool for football is actually growing smaller.
That's
as opposed to other sports like hockey, lacrosse, soccer. Those other sports have growing talent pools where the talent pool for football is going to continue to shrink. So is the product on the field going to end up suffering because you want to have more games and, I guess, capitalize right now on the United States' fascination with football? I think that that could be a part of the thinking behind it is, okay, this is our window. We have a market monopoly, essentially, besides college football, and we need to be able to suck out as much money from this market as we can while it is still going to be this huge market. I don't foresee it going away anytime soon, personally. Like, maybe in a few generations, but eventually, football is going to, I think, it's going to be a slow burn, a slow death. But in my opinion, the NBA is going to be the number one league coming up
very soon
and, in the future.
And I've had this conversation. There has been whispers through a lot of Reddit streams, through a lot of other online forums.
Ooh, Reddit streams.
That Adam Silver is absolutely in the backs of NFL owners' minds in terms of when Roger Goodell's contract comes up. There are a number of NFL owners who really, really want Adam Silver to be the NFL commissioner. And now that to me would be a brilliant move by the NFL, first and foremost. Adam Silver is the best commissioner in sports. He's changing the sport of basketball. When David Stern was there, a lot of the off the court stuff, right? Like, he had a very strict marijuana policy. He had a lot of player contractual policies that hurt the league. Now you see literal players thriving. You see, and the thing is, what it's forcing teams to do is understand, like, you have to fill your roster with good players. And unless you have one really good one, you look at the Charlotte Hornets, for instance. I mean, between four players named Nicholas Batum, and honestly, I can't even really name the other guys, they have like 100.
Frank Kaminsky.
But yes, they have like over $150 million locked up into four below average players. And it just goes to show you in the NBA, and this was a conversation we were talking about last week, Joe DiBiase and I, talking about the salary cap in the NHL, why having a hard cap nowadays is so stupid and so lame. It's stagnated. It is flatlined. It's plateaued NHL player salaries. Yep. Where, you know, 20 years ago, Jaromír Jágr was making $10 million. The best player in the NHL right now is making $12 million per year. And you look at the NBA, and Michael Jordan was making $12 million a year. The best player in the NBA right now is making $40 million. In the NFL, I mean, you look at some of these, and they're not even guaranteed in the NFL. So it just kind of goes to show you. And in Major League Baseball, a league that people keep saying the sport is dying, yet their best players just signed $200 million contracts.
Well, I look at it too as with the NHL and the NFL, why would they want to bring in a guy like Adam Silver? Because I feel that Adam Silver is such a player-friendly commissioner. And is that truly good for business? Like, do you want to be paying guys that guaranteed money? Do you want to be paying those hugely inflated salaries? Do you want to be paying guys $20 million plus?
I mean,
$40 million, $50 million
plus? Let's talk about accessibility for a second. Let's talk about your league being accessible to its fans. There isn't a better league than the NBA of making the game accessible to every fan. The NFL does everything it can. It uses terms like intellectual property. It uses terms like, you can't use my film, things like that. It's the no fun league. They've done everything they can to try to cut off fans, but fans keep coming back for more. Where the NBA has really, YouTube streaming NBA games, right? Like, you can watch a live NBA game on YouTube. You could just type it in and watch the game. That's awesome. And the NFL would look at that as a revenue opportunity missed, where the NBA sees it as an opportunity of, we're going to grow our game and people are going to buy more league pass so they can watch all the games. If we give them a preview of one game a night on YouTube, that person is going to consume the product, enjoy the product, and potentially want to get a paid product so they can watch more and consume more. And with the NFL, fantasy football, in my opinion, has stretched the lifespan of the NFL by maybe 100 years. Like, whether or not football becomes unpopular due to concussions and due to a lot of injury issues, that is something. But with fantasy, the popularity of fantasy football has elongated the life of the NFL, maybe by it's threefold, right? And yet, what is the NFL doing outside of that fantasy football realm? What is the NFL doing to re-engage people? What's the NFL doing to help prop up fantasy and daily fantasy? And obviously, I think this is a crazy conversation that we're starting from 18 games, but I think it really sort of starts a conversation about what the NFL does to really engage their fan bases and what a move like this does to gain $2 billion of revenue. That's, of course, something to think about if you're an NFL owner, if you're an NFL player. But if you're an NFL player, and Joe DiBiase and we're talking on Twitter, if you're the NFLPA, which DeMarre Smith already said, nope, not happening, we don't even want to take this to the table, 18 games. What would it take you, if you're DeMarre Smith, if you're the NFL Players Association, to say, I will consider this? I said, if the NFL and the owners and Roger Goodell go up to the Players Association and say, we will take off marijuana in terms of a banned substance and suspensions for the National Football League players, they can use it for pain relief as long as they're in medical states. We will no longer be testing though for marijuana. It can be a team. It could be team policies, but the NFL is not governing your use of marijuana. I think the Players Association would be dumb not to listen to that argument.
I think that would be something that I'm not sure that's necessarily worth it still.
I agree. But if you're the NFLPA,
I don't think it would be worth it.
I would say that's a starting point.
Yeah, I think you would have to get into
guaranteed contracts,
guaranteed salary, when, you know, gambling money comes into the equation. Once it starts going nationwide and that gambling ends up being legal nationwide, what piece are the players going to get out of that gambling money? I think that's going to be a potential starting point, is going to be more so of that profit sharing with the NFL, and how much of that piece is the players going to be able to get. If the players are going to be playing an extra two games and putting their bodies on the line for an extra two games, they'll still only be playing 16 games with this proposal, but having an extra two games on the NFL schedule, the players, I think, would be, this is an opportunity for them to, I guess, like, fight for their rights of being able to sign a contract, have that guaranteed money be there, and just have it guaranteed throughout the contract, as opposed to having all these performance bonuses and everything like that. Just have that money, and then what of the piece of the NFL pie are you going to be getting? What is it? What are you getting from ad revenue? What are you getting from the gambling revenue that's going to come in, stadium revenue? What piece are the players getting? I don't have the numbers of what they get now or anything like that, but that's what I would be targeting as the NFLPA is saying, okay, this is going to add an additional $2.5 billion in your pockets, and there's going to be another revenue stream of gambling coming into the future that you are really going to try to get your hands into. How are we going to get paid out on that, since these players are the ones who are making the product that you're making all this money off of? How much do they deserve and earn for being the reason why there is a game, why you have fans, why people are showing up to your stadiums and buying tickets and buying shirts and jerseys and everything like that? That's what the NFLPA has to be doing, is fighting for that higher percentage of the revenue pie, especially if it's going to continue to keep growing. And then you can start widening the rosters and paying players more money. And it'll always end up being top heavy, because the best players will always demand a high percentage of the salary cap or whatever it is. Or maybe it's even changing those rules too for the NFLPA and start going to a luxury tax model like the NBA, because I feel personally that is what's led to these players being able to make 40
That's exactly
plus
right. Teams are willing to go over that threshold, right? Teams are willing to go over that threshold to keep good players. And you look at small market teams, does it alienate them? I don't think so. I mean, you look at some of the small market teams in the NFL. Look at the two of them. The Green Bay Packers and the Buffalo Bills are your two smallest market teams in the NFL. The Green Bay Packers don't have any problem spending money. The Bills have one of the top 10 richest owners in the sport, right? So they're not going to have any problems. I think the interesting thing, and before we go to break, and Matt Perino of New York Upstate is going to join us here next on the Western Hotline, the next CBA opens is set to be collectively bargained on after the 2020 season. So they've got this season and next season, and then I see I basically put in, when does the NFL collective bargaining agreement expire on Google? And the first article from 2017, May 30th, so this is almost full two. This is almost 2.5 years ago. Is the NFL Players Association is warning players to start saving their money now for the 2021 lockout. So I wonder if you look at it now from this perspective, do the Players Association have more leverage now than they did in 2011 when there was a 132-day lockout? I would say probably, but I don't really have like a quantitative, like this is why they have more. Is there a reason they'd have more leverage now than in 2011?
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either.
I'm not really sure. I would like to think yes, because you can just look at the NBA and its growing popularity and what has made that more popular. And I think it's giving players more power. And the NBA is always going to be a different beast just because of the star power that league can create, and the fact that one player or three players can truly make a difference on a team, opposed to the NFL, where there's always going to be that more team aspect to it. But being able to give the players more power, I think, has created a league that has now turned into reality TV, essentially. And it's because you have given the players the power, you've empowered them to be able to feel that they can make their own decisions regardless of being owned by these teams. You look at the NHL and what they do. Jack Eichel signed an 8-year contract with the Sabres, and he's going to spend 11 years of his career
barring
a trade in one place. What the NBA has done is given players power to decide where they're going to play, and it makes for a more interesting league. The NBA is by far the most interesting offseason of all the four sports, of any sport, I think, probably anywhere. It's the most interesting because it is player movement. It is what players are going to decide that they're going to team up and play together, and how are they going to convince each other and the teams that they're currently on to make that happen. And it happens year after year at this point, and it's because the players have been empowered.
And even players that signed 4-year max contracts like Paul George, 12 calendar months later, can say, I no longer want to live under the rules and the regulations I just signed on for. I'd like to be moved elsewhere and be moved the next day. It's just really the craziness that is the NBA, and it's something remarkable. It's something to continue talking about this afternoon here on Sports Talk Saturday. When we come back, Matt Perino, New York Upstate, joins Ryan and I here on Sports Talk Saturday. If you're hanging out on hold, stick around, because we will get to you on the other side. 803-0551, 888-552-550 here on WGR.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Welcome, everybody. Sports Talk Saturday back after a quick half-hour segment and talking a lot about the NFL, this new 18-game schedule proposed by the NFL to the NFLPA, which hasn't seen much positive talk around this 18-game schedule proposal. But now on the Western Hotline, New York Upstate's Matt Perino joins me. Matt, how are you, my friend? Good to talk to you again. It feels like just yesterday.
It really does, doesn't it?
Yes, you guys are at the dodgeball, the kickball tournament today, correct?
Yes. I'm out here on New Bills offensive lineman Adrian Waddle's team, and we're not doing too good. We're not doing too good. We're in our second game here. We lost the first, and we're down big in the second. So could be an early exit.
I feel like with Waddell, you have a guy that's like a power kicker, no? Like you have a guy that could go long at any moment, though.
Yeah, that's John Scott.
Oh.
And he's already got one home. He's already got one home run today.
Well,
it was pretty impressive.
I will have to bring that up with John because he's joining me at noon, so I'll talk to him about that home run.
And make sure you ask him about what shirt he's wearing today because he's got the guns out. Suns out, guns out.
Oh, does he have the cutoff? He's got the cutoff arm sleeves?
I mean, it's really the only way to play kickball is with no sleeves. You really got to show off those sleeves when you're kicking something.
So, Matt, we kind of started the show today talking about the new proposed 18-game schedule by the NFL, the owners, and the commissioner to the NFL Players Association, which essentially scoffed at the idea of potentially adding two games with the caveat that essentially they would be only eligible, players would only be eligible outside quarterbacks, kickers, and long snappers to play 16 of the 18 games. Just kind of off the cuff, what are your thoughts about a league that's already at 16 games and four preseason games going to potentially an 18-game schedule where its best players would only be able to play 16 of them?
I think it's kind of silly. Like, I think we get to this point in anything, not just sports, but in life where we like to tinker, right? I mean, even, you know, fantasy football is famous for it, right? I mean, you sit there and you go over these lineups in your head over and over again, and you're not happy with what you have. And I think that that's the case in the NFL right now. You're not happy with a 16-game schedule, which I think is kind of ludicrous. I mean, it literally dominates the news cycle, the NFL, for, you know, 12 months of the year, maybe 11. Right now is kind of a downtime. So I think it's crazy. I think that, you know, to put any more responsibility on, you know, the team and the coach and the front office to figure out when you're going to try to, you know, get your players to play certain games and this and that, I just think it's nonsense, to be honest with you. I think the way that the NFL is formatted right now is fine. I think there's going to be something done about the preseason. I don't think you need four games. I think you could probably get away with two or three. But I think the way the regular season works, and then you start talking about, like, I haven't given this a ton of thought, but if you go to an 18-game schedule, what you're going to have to start kind of anticipating what records mean and what kind of things that do players accomplish, and putting that into perspective against what's been done in the past. And I just think you're opening a door that doesn't need to be opened.
I didn't even really put into my mind the idea of records, statistics, and especially if you have quarterbacks, which is part of the proposed rule, having quarterbacks have the opportunity to play all 18 games while other positions only get the opportunity to play 16. I don't see that there. And the idea that now quarterbacks in a league that is already incredibly more air-oriented, everyone's passing the football, you get two more games, there's not going to be any passing record left undone. I mean, like, especially when you look at some of the Patrick Mahomes. What would Patrick Mahomes done with two more regular season games last year?
Yeah, and I just think you get to the point where you are overthinking things, like I said. And I think that, you know, what's the end game here? I mean, the NFL prints money. I think the fans are plenty happy with the schedule. I think 16 games, 8 home, 8 away is enough time to figure out, you know, who are the best teams in the league to set up a tournament. And I just think I get it. You want to make more money. You want to make more money. But at what point do you get to the point where you're just like, you know, we're good. We make enough money. Let's figure out how to make things better. You know, we're spending a lot of time this offseason also talking about some of the rule changes that are going to be in place with, you know, the change in instant replay and the way that, you know, calls are going to be impacted late in games. Are we spending the appropriate amount of time to make sure that these aren't, you know, off-the-cuff, reactionary changes? I don't know. I just think that it's all – the NFL is a great game, or a great product, and the NFL does a great job for the most part of – you know, executing its league. So I just think it's just too much.
Matt Parrino here on the Wester Hotline. Matt, you and I talked a lot about Josh Allen on our Instagram Live earlier this week, and it sort of made me start to think, because it was on Twitter the other day. People basically were asking, you know, who are the three irreplaceable players on every football team? And I thought about the Bills, and basically everyone I thought in terms of irreplaceable that are on this Bills roster, they were all on the defensive side of the ball. If you looked at the offense right now, obviously we don't don't know where each 11 positions is going to ultimately slot in. I think we probably have an idea about five or six of them. The rest are still kind of up to training camp battles. In your opinion, who is the most irreplaceable player on offense? And we can use players that have not played a down yet for the Buffalo Bills.
I think the most irreplaceable player right now is Mitch Morse. I think that's the most important player, and I think that's the most, you know, if he gets hurt, I think that changes the entire complexion of this offense. Because you saw last year, especially if you go back and dial up the tape on the end of the season and the way that the Bills started to have some success, even when things were going good, that interior offensive line play was just absolutely atrocious. You saw Matt Barkley come in last year, have some success in a backup role on 2 weeks' notice. So I don't think you can make the argument that Josh Allen is irreplaceable just yet. But I think what Mitch Morse is going to bring from a consistency perspective, what he is going to do for those playing around him, maybe a Quentin Spain, maybe a young Wyatt Teller, even Deion Dawkins, who you saw his play kind of fall off quite a bit, not being able to play next to Richie Incognito and Eric Wood, you know, a guy that, you know, was relied upon on that offensive line for years and years. And I think that he's also irreplaceable, Morse, because of the impact that he's potentially going to have on Josh Allen. Patrick Mahomes said it. You know, Mitch Morse was a big part of making him feel comfortable as a rookie. And obviously, Josh Allen's, you know, taking his lumps already. He went through that really rough first season. But I think he's going to be able to lean on Mitch Morse and everything that went well in Kansas City last year. He's going to be in his ears. They're going to be sharing ideas. And I think that that type of experience is why they went out and made him the highest paid center in the NFL.
Yeah, I think that's probably the player I look at on the offensive side of the ball is the one player you say this team could be much better because of. And I think it starts at the offensive line. You and I, when talking about Josh Allen, Matt, had a lot to say about what their improved offensive line might mean for the performance on a week-to-week basis of a Josh Allen. The other, obviously, position that I think maybe I have my eyes on more than any other this year is the tight end position. You could say that maybe over the course of the last three or four seasons, let's just use the Charles Clay era as an example here, Matt. Like, the Charles Clay era, I think you could look at any position on the field and you could say, well, at least the Bills at the tight end position, they have a guy there. He may not be the best tight end in football, but he's definitely within the top 15. Well, you look at the position now, Matt, and there is definitely a lot of uncertainty about what happens at that position during training camp. They've got a lot of bodies. They paid a lot of money to Tyler Kroft, who is not, in all likelihood, going to be ready for training camp. They go out and they get Lee Smith, who's mostly been a predominantly blocking tight end over the course of his career, including his time in Buffalo. Never had more than seven catches in a season. Then, you know, obviously they've got the rookie, they've got Dawson Knox, and they've got Kroom, who last year came on as maybe their most consistent tight end at the end of the season. When you look at that position, there's probably only room for three of them. How do you do that with two draft picks, a guy that you paid a lot of money to, and a guy that showed out last year as potentially the most consistent guy in the roster when you've got so many bodies but only three spots to fill on your roster?
Yeah, so I just flied out while you were talking, disappointing. But you know what? There's no at-bats off. So you get in the game and you kick it. And it didn't go like I wanted, but no, I think that's a great question. And I think that you look at the roster, and I put out my 53-man projection, and I had Jason Kroom not making the roster. But at that time, I wasn't really giving it a lot of thought to the fact that I don't think Tyler Kroft is going to be ready by week one.
Right.
He might be cleared. He might be, you know, practicing. But I don't think coming off of a broken foot, you're going to be able to really not only coming off the broken foot, but getting up to speed on this offense and enough reps to where you're going to be a factor. So I think Jason Kroom makes the roster out of camp. I think he did enough out of last year, and I think he'll continue to do so if he can stay healthy in training camp. And then you figure the four guys, you know, Dawson Knox, Tommy Sweeney, Lee Smith, and Jason Kroom, and I think you got your blocking, I think you got your playmaking, and I think you got a little bit of everything in a Sweeney prospect.
Sure.
And I think that from there who knows? I mean, it's funny. I was talking about this with some fans the other day on social media. It's like, you know, we don't think a lot about it because, you know, everybody's raving about Dawson Knox, but there is not a lot of depth at this position, and that may be a little bit concerning. Now, you go back and look at last year, you didn't get a lot of production from Charles Clay,
yeah,
your starter that you were paying a lot of money to. So, you know, it's not like the bar is going to be set terribly high, but I do think that they have to figure out, do we have somebody that can be a consistent contributor in the passing game? If that's going to be Dawson Knox, fine. But if you don't figure that to be Sweeney or Kroom, and Kroft's not going to be ready, which I don't anticipate him being, I think you got to make a move and figure out, you know, who you're going to bring in to, until Kroft is ready.
I want to build off that because we had Benjamin Albright here on the program. I think it would have been last week when I was filling in for John Murphy. And one of the points that he mentioned was he used the name Patrick DeMarco when talking about what this team does at the tight end position. And I was kind of... It hadn't even crossed my mind that Elise Smith, right, a guy that is predominantly known for his blocking, what if you're in a scenario where you're saying, well, we really like Lee Smith, we think that he can provide all the same things that Patrick DeMarco can at the fullback position, and we're not really going to be running an offense where the fullback is getting a predominant usage. He's one of the highest paid fullbacks in football. Do you see a situation where maybe they go four tight ends and this team doesn't keep a fullback on the roster?
I mean, I definitely see a scenario where that happens. The problem is you take a deeper look at what Patrick DeMarco is for this team, and you really start to wonder, what does Sean McDermott value? He values team guys that hold people accountable in every room. They brought Frank Gore in here. Are four running backs going to make this roster? Are five if they keep the four and Sonoris Perry, who's a special teams guy? I don't think so. And Patrick DeMarco plays a ton of special teams. He was a captain last year. I agree. I think that, you know, for a 30th-ranked offense, you have to figure out a way to start making more plays, moving the ball, and scoring more points. But it's tough for me to get to a place quite yet until I see their offense in these preseason games to where I think that they're going to totally move on from Patrick DeMarco.
Matt Perino, New York Upstate on the Wester Hotline. Matt, yesterday you were writing about LeSean McCoy. He turned 31, and the running back position is another one where there is a lot of bodies there. It's going to be talked a lot about going into training camp and throughout training camp. Just talk to me a little bit about what you were writing about yesterday with LeSean McCoy. Is he still a viable starting running back? And then how do you see the position kind of filtering out by the end of camp?
You know, I think it's funny. I think a lot of people are already penciling TJ Yeldon off of this roster because you go through and, you know, position by position, and but there's a lot more, you know, bulk to this roster than there was a year ago. So it's hard to get down to that 53, and they brought in Yeldon, but bringing four running backs in with you, it doesn't make a ton of sense unless one is a real contributor on special teams, and none of those four with Singletary, Gore, McCoy, and Yeldon, none of them really are. So I think that, you know, right now plans are all systems go for LeSean McCoy when the season starts. I think we can read a lot into the fact that Devin Singletary got just as many first-team reps in training camp in mini camp and OTAs as LeSean McCoy. Listen, you don't go out there and spend a third-round draft pick on a running back and not play him. He's going to get touches. If he can get involved in the passing game, something that LeSean McCoy wasn't able to do last year, and that's something where I thought, you know, I know there's a lot of talk about Josh Allen's short game and, the inaccuracy in some of these short throws, but you go back and watch some of these games, and LeSean McCoy was dropping passes in the screen game last year. That just can't happen. You need consistency. You know, LeSean McCoy himself said it last year. He said, we have to take it upon ourselves to make plays for our rookie quarterback. And guess what? It just didn't happen enough of the time. Charles Clay dropping balls, LeSean McCoy dropping balls, Marcus Murphy, you know, you can go down the list of guys that, you know, weren't getting it done at different stages of last season. So they go out and they bring in a guy like TJ Yeldon, who is, you know, a very sure-handed target out of the backfield, a great blocker. He can kind of do everything, almost like that perfect secondary option. Frank Gore, all Sean McDermott's been talking about this entire offseason is what Frank Gore has meant to the locker room. And you had LeSean McCoy as your captain last year. Why did you need to bring in somebody to bolster the leadership in the locker room? I don't know. I think all bets are off. I can see any type of combination coming out of camp. I think McCoy is going to be there because why would you not try to move him at this point if he wasn't going to be a part of the plan? But if they get into the games and he's still struggling to get any type of consistent production, I think they move on and they go with the other three and, you know, add a Sonoris Perry or somebody like that for special teams.
All right, man, we appreciate it, buddy. Enjoy the rest of your kickball game, and make sure that you use the inner side of your big toe. I think that is the most important thing, piece of information I can tell you.
And I would also say you don't want to kick too hard. When you kick too hard, that's when the flyouts come in.
I hear you, man. I think we lost, so it's, it's a disappointing end to a great season, but... maybe not. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, Matt, thanks a lot, buddy. We'll be talking soon as we head to training camp, buddy.
All right, thank you.
All right, buddy. Matt Parrino there of NewYorkUpstate.com. When we come back, we got a call on hold. We'll get to call when we come back. It's Harrison Ford's 77th birthday today, and I want to ask Ryan what the best Harrison Ford movie ever made, and if it's not The Fugitive, you're wrong. Welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday. Let's go to a quick phone call because Buzz in Buffalo has been waiting patiently for the last two segments. Buzz, you're on with Nate and Ryan. How are you? Buzz, we got you.
Hello.
Oh, I got you now. Hello. We got you now, Buzz.
Something was funky.
Something was screwy, but we got you going.
Okay, yeah. I got a couple of things for sure on this 18-game schedule. You know, the NFL, we heard from your station, somebody, I can't remember who reported it, like a year ago, they were floating this idea with sitting, you know, 18 games, and the guys got to sit, you know, everyone's got to sit two games. That's not what they're really after. The NFL just wants 18 games. The reason they're introducing this now is because what are we going into here? The preseason. And the one thing that every NFL fan hates is the preseason. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. And so, you know, I mean, how many snaps do I want to see Josh Allen take this preseason? Zero. If he didn't play one snap, I would be happy. OTA after OTA after OTA. And so, of course, everyone's after money, right? Now, let's not forget, the players are just as greedy as the owners. Okay, Le'Veon Bell, let's use him as an example. Okay, enough said. So the Players Association will go along with this. You'll expand the rosters. Okay, so that's good for a Players Association, right? You expand the rosters. Two preseason games, 18 regular season games, everyone plays them all. Now, if you do happen to go to this 18 games and everyone's got to sit out two games except the quarterback, now how valuable is an NFL quarterback nowadays? Now, if he's exempt, the quarterbacks are going to eat up all the money. Mm-hmm. I mean, why wouldn't you pay for a quarterback that can play 18 games? You'd pay Tom Brady $100 billion a year if you could. You know, so basically the NFL is looking to get an 18-game season when everyone gets to play. I have no idea why they're floating out there like this, but you're going to see it. And you're going to go to two preseason games, and you're going to go to 18 regular season games. It's going to happen. Everyone's going to make more money. The more people are going to make money. The rosters will be expanded. And as far as the records go, hey, OJ rushed for 2,003 yards in 14 games. Enjoy the show. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a good afternoon.
Yeah, Buzz, thanks for calling in. Thanks for your contribution there. Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think your point on the quarterback's salaries continuing to go up while every other player remains stagnant is definitely a point that I hadn't considered, and definitely something that could definitely be an argument against the idea of 16 out of 18 games for position players outside of quarterback, kicker, and long snapper. When we come back, John Scott, Spectrum News, is going to join us here next on Sports Talk Saturday.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
And we will get into Harrison Ford's best movie with John here next on Sports Talk Saturday on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.